Well, back in the time before COVID-19, today was going to be a service that acknowledged the evolution of pride in Thunder Bay and in this community. Now, this year at LUF, we are celebrating the silver anniversary of LUF as a welcoming congregation. 25 years ago, in 1995, we became either the second or third congregation in Canada to earn that designation. Now, hopefully, once we're able to hold services in person again, we will honor the work of those who brought that about. One of the reminders for the continued need for pride is the fourth anniversary of the massacre of 49 innocent people at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. And I do want to say that the pandemic has not affected Thunder Pride's willingness to celebrate this month. Of course, all of the events that they have planned have been modified by the need for physical distancing. Today, however, we want to look at some of the impact of COVID-19 and other developments on our emotional and mental health, and how we can respond with resilience to this situation. This has been compounded recently by the murder of George Floyd and the dramatic rise of anti-racism movements in the United States, in Canada, and around the world. All of these things challenge us in many different ways. I want to offer a personal perspective, and then Hanusha will follow up with some suggestions for promoting resilience. As we began the process of self-isolation and social distancing, I had to acknowledge my privileged position. Now, self-isolation was important. At 77, I'm part of the vulnerable population, and my partner, Brian, is dealing with a chronic health issue. However, I'm retired and with a small but steady income, living in a private home with a partner. We had no need to be forced into public spaces and the threat of the virus. But as the days passed by and information continued to grow about this pandemic, memories of the 1980s and 90s flared up. I began to flash back to the more than 20 years that I had spent caught up in the HIV/AIDS epidemic. When I retired in 2007, I thought I'd put all of the trauma and grief behind me. And would just be able to move on, to a new phase of life. Now, the song that we watched, A Human Touch, was used in a documentary called 5B. It was about the first AIDS ward in San Francisco. I have to admit, every time I watch it, I'm brought to tears, and I'm flooded with the memories of that earlier time and the many lives that were lost and damaged in those years. Today, it's mainly seniors who are dying in similar ways in long-term care homes instead of hospitals or else in hospitals. Now, all of that, along with many other things, had made me realize that all of the trauma and grief was still deeply embedded, and this new pandemic was bringing it back to the surface. Just at the end of May, Larry Kramer, one of the most public AIDS activists of the period, had died, and started to surface about the relationship between Kramer and Dr. Anthony Fauci. Now, Fauci was one of the lead players during the HIV/AIDS epidemic, and he's doing the same during this pandemic. And all of these things have brought to the past flooding into the present. as time moved on, I realized that a certain fragility had crept in along with the resurgence of guilt, grief. I mean, for a time, I was unhappy about having to go out at all, even for essentials. And we've used pickup and delivery services for groceries whenever possible. Now, more recently, I've been able to come out of this malaise, and I've been able to look at all of this and come to terms with it, even though, as you can tell, the emotion is still close to the surface. But it's raised many questions for me and possibly for others. I've called on a variety of spiritual practices to help overcome these feelings. Now, I know that suffering is a part of the human condition and that nothing is permanent and so on. The important thing for me was to recognize what was happening, to acknowledge it, and to face it. I have to let the feelings and emotions arise and pass away. But coming from this position of relative privilege, I thought, if I was finding this difficult, what about so many others, especially those in less privileged situations? What must it be like for those living alone, unable to connect with others, for those in abusive relationships, or for those with no money or even no home? A current article in the Scientific American describes the epidemic as the biggest psychological experiment in history. Lydia Denworth writes, "The impact of COVID-19 on the physical health of the world's citizens is extraordinary. The pandemic's effect on mental health could be even more far-reaching. At one point, roughly one-third of the world's population was under orders to stay home." And a Belgian health psychologist suggests that the lockdown is arguably the largest psychological experiment ever conducted. But what about resilience? A resilient individual resembles a twig with a fresh, green, living core. When twisted out of shape, such a twig bends, but it does not break. Instead, it springs back and continues growing. Now, as many as two-thirds of individuals recover from difficult experiences without prolonged psychological effects. But the other third can suffer real psychological distress, some people for a few months, others for years. So, during this pandemic, people are facing a multiple wallop: the threat of disease, loneliness of isolation, loss of loved ones, repercussions of job loss, and ongoing uncertainty about when the pandemic will end. We've been very fortunate here in Thunder Bay and northwestern Ontario. Our small numbers and geographic isolation have certainly helped reduce the impact. As well, our local health authorities, by and large, have been proactive and very effective in dealing with the pandemic. Still, many of us are affected, even if not affected, even if not infected. So what are some of the things we can do? For me, meditation has been helpful, and certainly maintaining this connection with the LUF community has been very helpful. Connecting with nature, even if just in our little backyard, has been helpful. Listening to music has been helpful. And I even find doing jigsaw puzzles on the computer to be helpful. So today, I certainly feel much and have been noticing a willingness to begin to move back into the outer world and face the challenges moving forward. We all need to find our own way to maintain balance and build resilience in these times. And Hanusha will offer suggestions to help us in this regard. So if you'll give me a moment, I'll cue up a song by Joyce Poley called Healing Circle. And that will lead us into Hanusha's part of the presentation.
Thanks, David. So what I have prepared to share with you this morning is a mixture of what mental health experts are saying about resilience, my own clinical experience, and just my own experience as a person. It's certainly not an exhaustive list, and you may have suggestions of your own that you may wish to share when we do our community dialogue and reflections afterwards. But let's start with what I've prepared. We are witnessing and feeling a lot of unpleasant emotions these days. Worry, frustration, fear, anger, distrust. If we ourselves have experienced severe illness, epidemics, whether it be polio or AIDS or something else, or even if we've been confined and contained for long periods of time, then our body-mind system can automatically react by calling up thoughts and emotions and even physical experiences from that time, even if our current circumstances are very different. And of course, as empathetic human beings, we naturally resonate with the emotions around us, regardless of whether or not we agree with statements or actions that accompany them. Well, emotions need release. Stress acts like a trigger. It tells the body to prepare for an emergency. With physical threats, we can save ourselves by running, fighting, constructing tools, thinking of solutions. And then when that's done, the parasympathetic nervous system kicks in and it puts us into relax, repair, restore mode. But with chronic problems and emotional distress, there isn't always a physical solution and outlet. So our bodies can stay in emergency mode, which they're not meant to do for prolonged periods. So when we go through a hard time, when we hurt, it's okay, it's even necessary to say ouch. All of us need to hear other people express their emotions without shutting them down, and that can be difficult. We need to not necessarily rush to bring out the facts to prove that the other person is overreacting or being irrational. That's not the most helpful first step. The first step is for the person to express and for someone else to hear and validate. Now, someone's come up with the cute idea that if you look at the word emotions, you separate the E, it's energy and motion. Well, there's some value to looking at it that way. Really, emotions literally need to be moved. So we need to look for ways to move that pent-up energy and stress and potentiality out of our bodies. And any safe way of moving will do just fine. Some people do it by cleaning furiously. That's okay. Some people like to dance. And don't be stopped by the fact that, oh, I'm not good on the dance floor. I don't know the moves. My legs can't do it anymore. Sit in a chair and move your body that way. Does the same thing. You can rock. We have a natural tendency to rock either side to side or back and forth when we soothe infants in distress. Well, we can use that for ourselves too. We can walk, we can bike, swim, speak, yell, sing, write, drum on anything, your tabletop, your cereal box, your knees, it doesn't matter, you're moving. And rhythmic activity is actually also soothing. So after we've moved the emotions out of our bodies, then we can apply our rational thinking, our problem-solving skills, help ourselves maintain a balanced perspective, and use all of our capacities to manage the situation, even if it takes a while. Another thing that's very important to do is to take sensory breaks. Even before all this COVID business started, we lived in a world of sensory overload. 24-hour news, constant input. You know, for the first few weeks, you could not see an item on the CBC news page that was not somehow related to COVID. It was like an obsession. Numbers, predictions, new rules, speculations. Now, I'm a nerd, and even I got tired of it. Our overburdened minds need moments of quiet. We need it to just settle the system. We even need it to process the information, whether or not we're actively thinking about it in our conscious awareness. So that quiet can come from sitting in your favorite chair, in a pool of sunlight, looking at the moon, sitting under a whispering tree, polishing your cat, but just something quiet where you're not busy, 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 busy thinking or inputting information all of the time. The trouble is we have to make that happen intentionally because the to-do list is endless, even when we're locked into our homes. Now, the next suggestion, let's make that participatory. I'm going to invite you to breathe with me. Now, I know you breathe anyway because you're conscious, but let's breathe in a different way. So sitting as comfortably as you can where you are, try very consciously taking in a breath. Feel that expansion and lifting in your lungs and in your shoulders. Hold that for a moment and slowly, evenly, thoroughly let the breath out. Let's do that again. Breathe in. It's actually a very simple Tai Chi exercise. I don't know how much I can demonstrate sitting here, but what you do is you, as you breathe in, you lift your hands up like the wrists are leading. And as you breathe out, you let them flop down slowly. Breathe out. So there's this beautiful, gentle, rhythmic motion that accompanies the breathing in, that pause, and the breathing out. Now, why am I asking you to do that? I know it seems oversimplified. You know, what's this all about? People are always telling me to breathe. Well, why is that? Well, breathing, slow, gentle, meditative breathing, is one of the most accessible ways to help ourselves and others. It takes no special equipment. You don't need special training, a license, or a location. What we're learning through research is that breathing deeply and expanding our lungs causes a reaction in our stretch detectors, if we can call them that, in our lungs and in the brain. Well, that sends a signal to our brain, which then sends a signal to the liver, that place that manufactures our hormones and our neurotransmitters. And the liver then creates acetylcholine. That's an essential component for the production of the happy chemicals that we have naturally running around in our system. Serotonin, the feel-good chemical, and making sure we have enough serotonin is at the basis of a lot of antidepressant medication. Oxytocin, that's homemade ecstasy. It's released when moms give birth. It's released in lovemaking. It's released in other human activities. So when we breathe slowly, comfortably, in a relaxed manner, and we expand our lungs, we're actually helping our internal system, right? We are designed for resilience to do its job and help us out. So meditation practices can assist with that. Singing and recitation of poetry, because it involves long exhalations, right? You can't breathe in at the same time you're saying a word or singing a tune. So breathing, singing, recitation, reading aloud, those are good ways to maintain a helpful breathing practice. The next thing I offer you is that we need to nourish our spirits right now. It's true, beautiful things don't solve problems, but they do feed our souls with goodness and hope and comfort and inspiration. That can recharge our batteries for all of the demands that life puts on us now. So give yourself the gift of uplifting music. inspirational reading, deep, thoughtful friends, funny friends, spiritual gatherings, the powerful presence of the natural world. Research is now verifying for us what practice has told us for years, that beauty and natural settings have a powerful positive effects on our emotions. And that means it's good for our bodies as well. In fact, one small element of that, there's some preliminary evidence to indicate that some of the chemicals released by pine trees promote expansion of the airways. So we want to naturally breathe more deeply when we're in a natural setting that has pine trees. So we're very lucky up here. We have lots of those. One component of human resilience is the ability to pause, regroup, nourish our spirits, so that we may more ably attend to the challenges in front of us. Number 5, connecting to self. This is a time that surely tests our strength, our hopefulness, our resilience, and even our integrity. We're called upon to dig deep into our reserves for patience, inventiveness, hope, and understanding other people's experience. We are called to challenge old ways of thinking and doing, whether it's about infection control, basic social needs, or the distribution of wealth and power. And yet we can anchor ourselves in core values to see us through this. Does the way that we spend our time and the people that we spend our time and energy with show us these values? Does it play them out? Are we spending some effort reading and thinking about things that speak to those values and help us to clarify and solidify them? Or are we just filling the hours or getting pulled into the latest sensational political gaffe or scary medical report? No, I have to admit, I do sometimes get pulled into the drama of rage and finger pointing. Those of you who follow me on Facebook will see that. What I'm trying to aim for now is to balance that off a little bit more. Yes, I need to speak up about things, but wow, it's really important to also share goodness and spiritual life and strength and hopefulness. I see that I have a responsibility to do both. Examples of human beings triumphing over their baser instincts. Those are good things to read about too. So we have time now, many of us, to check in. Who am I at my core? Is that coming out in my everyday words and deeds? Am I putting my faith into practice? Those are good questions to ask. And finally, contributing to others. The world is hurting now. Friends, neighbors, and family members are struggling with isolation and fear of illness. Our brothers and sisters who are marginalized for their race are hurting and demanding change. It's often been said that for evil to triumph, it only requires the good people do nothing. Well, one of the best ways to combat evil and injustice and to avoid getting stuck in our own individual distress is to reach out to others. So find common cause. Support movements that work for respect, equality, and justice. Support hope, which is a vital component of resilience. Within the limits that are safe for your well-being, appropriate for your economic condition, you might choose to march, or you might choose to donate, or challenge, gently or assertively, depending on what's right for you, friends and family whose beliefs and actions are harmful. Or to make an extra effort to just brighten someone's day. One way to fashion a better life for ourselves is to contribute to the building of a better life for all. I hope that something in these suggestions will resonate with you and help you through these challenging times. May we be well, and may we be the best that we can be.